lot of times these recordings that were made from the radio in New York would be, you know, sold on the street corner or mailed to a friend down in Atlanta or whatever. And that's how music from the very early days of hip hop was getting spread beyond its local reach.
You're listening to Radio Survivor, the sound of strong communities. I'm Jennifer Waits, and with me is Eric Klein from Portland.
Everybody.
And today we have as our guest the founder of the Hip Hop Radio Archive, Ryan McMichael. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
And Ryan, it was so serendipitous that you were introduced to me recently, because behind the scenes here at Radio Survivor, we've been talking about the importance of hip hop history and radio. And I think you've heard on some of our recent podcasts, we've talked about the important role of hip hop in college radio in particular. So I was excited to learn about this archive that you've started to really try to bring together all these interesting recordings that people have made and saved from the history of hip hop. So maybe if you could just start and tell us a little bit about what exactly the Hip Hop Archive is.
Well, I'm going to read directly from my mission statement, because I've been working on it since I launched the site last year and tweaking it. I think I finally got it right, because I feel like it finally describes the full purpose of the site concisely, more concisely than this lead-up does. The Hip Hop Radio Archive aims to digitize, preserve, share, and contextualize recordings of hip hop radio from the 1980s and 1990s from commercial, college, community, and pirate stations of all sizes, telling the stories of the shows and the people that made them. And that's really the goal, is to take these two formative decades of radio, when radio was a primary way that hip-hop spread new music before the internet was huge, before, and in some cases before, shows like UMTV Raps were on TV spreading the sound, hip-hop radio was doing that.
And what sparked this? What was the moment or the idea that made you think that this was really imperative to start this archive?
So all throughout my childhood, I was really obsessed with the radio, which I guess is typical for 80s kids. But I was so obsessed that even my first article that I ever wrote was for a fifth grade school newspaper. And I interviewed Terry Motormouth Young from WCAU in Philadelphia. So I was always obsessed with radio and the effect that it had. So all throughout my childhood, and especially into high school when I could actually afford blank tapes on my own, I was recording hip-hop radio shows that I would hear that were based out of Philadelphia and New Jersey area. And back in 2007, I launched, I guess, what could be considered the first shot at this project with a music blog called Normal Bias, where really my goal was just to preserve these hundreds of tapes that I had sitting in my basement before they snapped and degraded.
Stereo 103.3 WPRB in Princeton. What's up, y'all? And welcome to another chapter in the continuing story of Raw Deal on a Thursday night. 3 hours of slamming hip-hop the way it was meant to be done. We got a lot of new music and a lot of special guests. Gee, who we got coming down tonight, man?
Who we got coming down?
Yeah, man.
We got my boy Albie from Tommy Boy, and he's also bringing along with him Prince Rakim and also Naughty by Nature, so stay tuned.
So that blog included just sharing of, you know, demo tapes, radio shows that I had recorded, my own college radio shows, and things like that. And that music blog, Normal Bias, I just put everything up on things like DivShare. Didn't really think too much about long-term preservation. Eventually, when all those links that I shared started to die and go away, I started to put things on the Internet Archive, and I realized that it was a little more important to pay attention to the long-term home for these things. So then in 2015, I launched a spin-off site called rawdealradio.com, which was focused on a radio show out of Princeton, New Jersey that ran from I think it was 88 through about 1993 on WPRB. Originally started as Club Crush, and then they changed their name to Raw Deal. So show them that you kept on it grew. Yeah, I did. This is from a flow, yes, I'm master. Tang blower on the board. You pass the microphone to the UMC posse and leave me with no. And this was the show that I listened to in high school and just stumbled upon when flipping through the dial one night. And it was the show that was most most formative to me, the music that I listened to, and even the way that I hosted my own college radio shows. I followed their format pretty closely in the way that they did things and their tone. And during those years, those high school years, I recorded every Thursday night. I was there recording the show, including and especially the air breaks, not just the music, because the air breaks to me were just as important as the music.
Connection ain't click, what? My dick chick. I smack a fish if it...
Oh, this is your friend Grover. And when I am not with my little friends on Sesame Street, or visiting with my big friend Mr. Rogers, and when I am not selling small defensive weapons to the Ayatollah, I come to Princeton, yes I do, and I listen to WPR... What is that last one? B. WPRB in Princeton at 103.3 on your FM dial. Thank you very much.
Stereo 103.
And that was a way I found out personally about a lot of hip-hop that was not airing on commercial Philadelphia or New York stations. Music from Trenton, New Jersey really broke big on WPRB. So, I made, you know, dozens and dozens of recordings over the years, and unfortunately didn't label a lot of them. But as I started this project of Normal Bias and then Raw Deal Radio, which was focused specifically on that show, I really dug in, listened to the episodes start to finish again, tried to date them based on ads and discussions that were happening on the show and music that was being played. I tagged them with full track listings, worked on tagging each show with the hosts that were in the studio that night as well as any guests, with the goal of trying to make this the main place people would go if they wanted to find out about this small little hip hop show in history. And while it never blew up by any means, it really caught the ear of a lot of people that remembered the show from their past. And so they've enjoyed browsing through the archive.
In the process, have you been in contact or with the hosts that used to do that show?
Yes. One of the hosts, G, who actually was also a promoter for the Wu-Tang Clan in the early days and throughout the 90s. I keep in touch with him pretty frequently, just talked to him the other night, actually. And he's fully behind the site and has supported it and has been gathering his own soundboard recordings to give to me to help fill in the gaps of the archive. One of the other hosts of the show, Tony D, unfortunately, he was a hip-hop producer and MC from Trenton as well, but he unfortunately passed away in a car accident back in 2010. But he was aware of the digitizing that was happening on Normal Bias, and he was also very excited about it, and we talked a number of times about the process. The third host, EZM, is now heading up a design agency in Philadelphia, and he's a little harder to get in contact with, but I think he's aware that the archive exists as well.
Ryan McMichael, can you give that archive another plug, please, and tell us again specifically what show that was? And why was it so important? That's a triple question.
Okay. So that the site is rawdealradio.com, and that covers Club Crush and Raw Deal, which were just the same show renamed. And it was an important show because since it aired out of Princeton, it had a reach to both New York and Philadelphia, but was breaking a lot of the music that New York and Philadelphia stations weren't. Philadelphia radio at the time was not really interested in New Jersey hip hop. Trenton and Camden, New Jersey rappers and groups did not really have much of an outlet. So Club Crush and Raw Deal were the place to go for that. They were the place where they went up and, you know, did their live on-air freestyles and where they broke new songs and played demos and all that sort of thing. So it was really important for the Trenton hip-hop community especially, because it really helped spread that music a little wider. And just personally, it was important to me because it introduced me to so much music that I wouldn't necessarily have heard otherwise.
Yeah, and you said it was the mid-80s to the 90s, right?
Yeah, I want to say I think they started in either 87 or 88 and ran until about 1993.
Thank you.
So it's interesting you mention the freestyles, because I would imagine that when you're looking at archives of hip-hop radio shows, that's going to be a hallmark of that, is that you're going to have some of these live freestyles happening. Does that comprise a lot of what you have in the archive?
Yeah, those are my favorite things to come across, because, you know, the music that they play, you can for the most part, you can get anywhere or with a little bit of searching. But those freestyles were, you know, singular moments in time. And were only captured by the luck of somebody at home hitting record or the DJ in the studio making sure that they had a tape running as well. So those are definitely some of the most fun moments, especially when you get artists that are coming up really early in their careers. Coming back to Club Crush and Raw Deal again, they were one of the first, if not the first show to feature Wu-Tang. And so they came up and, you know, RZA, when he was still known as Prince Rakim, was doing on-air freestyles, you know, before Protect Your Neck was out. Yeah, don't quit. Prince Rakim on the side of the sheet. Imagine to yourself and make the picture clear. Boy, girl situation, no one else is there. He invited her over to come and dine. The food wasn't ready, but she was on time. Hearing that stuff and then seeing them blow up worldwide a couple years later was, you know, is really interesting. And it's fun looking back to track that with other artists and other shows, seeing different areas of the country and of the world where people that were not known at the time were coming on and battling or freestyling, and then, you know, a couple of years later they were household names.
So we might have some listeners who aren't as familiar with hip hop. Could you explain a little bit what a freestyle is and what a rap battle is?
So a freestyle can be, people take a couple different ways. Some people define a freestyle as a strictly off the top of the head rhyme that's made up on the spot. Others will also include spontaneous rhymes, but that may have been pre-written or from unreleased songs, perhaps. Sometimes MCs would come up to shows and would try out new verses on the air to kind of see how they went over and then tweak them a bit more before they would go and record them in the studio. And rap battles are exactly what they sound like. They're, you know, MCs going at each other on the air. And you mentioned the one from Chicago with Kanye and Common from, I'm blanking on which station that was.
Yeah, HPK? WHPK, yeah, University of Chicago.
So on a previous episode of Radio Survivor, we couldn't stop talking about this particular rap battle on WHPK.
Right. And that's a good example. And another big one was on the Wake Up Show with Sway and King Tech out in San Francisco there back in the mid-90s with the Hieroglyphics and the Hobo Junction. They were two local crews there, and they had one of the most vicious battles that I think I've ever heard on the radio, because it was personal at that point. And that battle went down as legendary. And that actually brought to the forefront of what the definition of freestyle is, because one MC came one set of MCs came freestyling off the top of their head, and the other was supposedly coming with more written rhymes, and that was a contentious moment in the battle itself as well.
Oh, so is that sort of against the rules to come with pre-written rhymes if you're having a rap battle?
It's arguable either way. Usually it comes down to there's a mixture, so you always want to be up, you're going to have some ideas in your head, but they may not take full form until you're actually in the moment. That tends to be usually how it goes down.
And I hope we can get the links in the show notes to those two particular battles where artists are trading verses, sometimes politely and sometimes aggressively at each other. Link in the show notes on radiosurvivor.com.
So Ryan, I'm so interested in this idea of you listening to all these shows from WPRB and then going off to college and starting your own hip hop radio show. Can you explain where you went to college and the type of show you did and what the scene was like in that community?
Sure. So I went to Mary Washington College, which is now the University of Mary Washington down in Fredericksburg, Virginia. And they had a radio station, WMWC, that's been around since I want to say the late 1950s. It started off as an AM station. And by the time I got there in 1994, it was still broadcasting over AM, but most of the transmitters had been eaten by rats and mice. And I got more of a listenership of my freshman year show by turning the speakers out facing campus walk than I did from actual listeners over the radio.
Oh, yeah.
I'm sure that's a common trick in college radio, but
Yeah, you gotta the real deal is to get your speakers in the food court, you know, commons.
Like yeah, dining hall. Room.
Dining
it's
hall.
Key. Yes. Key.
Yeah. They did have the radio eventually when we moved to cable FM and radiating cable, which came before the internet radio that they set up. The dining hall did have it, okay. But it was always a battle of getting them to keep it on and not change it to WPGC or something like that.
Can I stop you there and ask you what radiating? Did you say radiating cable?
Radiating cable, yeah. It was an interesting technology that existed in the mid '90s that allowed small stations to broadcast over an FM frequency without getting an FM license.
Okay.
So essentially it connected through the university's cable system, but there were adapters that you could get to hook it up to your receiver or your boombox or whatever, and then you could actually dial in the station as a normal FM station.
Is this carrier current, Jennifer?
Carrier current is generally AM.
Okay.
But this would all qualify under Part 15 rules, which, you know, allows you to broadcast within a limited area.
This is where I wish I had mentioned at the top of the show that Paul Riesmandel, regular host of Radio Survivor, is not with us today. But I'm sure he'll have something to say about, what was it, bleeding?
Radiating cable?
Radiating. Why do I want to bleed it? Radiating cable on the next episode of Radio Survivor.
I'm not 100% sure that's what it was actually officially called, but that's what we always referred to it internally as.
that's cool. All right, so what were we talking about?
Oh yeah, so I started. I came in my freshman year and started a radio show called Sounds from the Attic, which was relatively free form, but I focused a lot on the music that I enjoyed the most. I had a partner during the first half of that year, so it was also a little mix of what he enjoyed as well. So it was hip hop and reggae and jazz and some blues and things like that. At Mary Washington at the time, there was really only one other hip-hop show that was run by a guy named Master Hurricane and his partner, Mr. Midnight. That was called The Dark Side, and that ran kind of during the same years that I ran my shows from 94 through about 98. And eventually at the station, I became a station manager, so I helped try to shift the focus to some of the more... I don't want to say non-traditional, but we were so focused on indie rock and college rock and, you know, whatever that entails at WMWC. I really was trying to push specialty shows that were more, you know, jazz focused and hip hop focused and metal, things like that. Just trying to get people to expand their repertoires a bit.
And were you able to have, was there a hip hop scene on campus? Were you able to have live, you know, freestyling and rap battles and the sorts of things that you heard on WPRB on your show?
Yeah. I mean, you've been to Fredericksburg, I know, to visit the station.
Yeah.
You know, it's not necessarily you walk on that campus and you don't necessarily think hip hop, but I was surprised to find that there were actually a number of other MCs on campus or that were nearby in the area, in the Fredericksburg, Stafford area. So we would have...
What city?
Fredericksburg? This is in Fredericksburg, Virginia.
Okay. Thank you.
Kind of Civil War town. So we would occasionally have folks up to the studio, and I would say that in general, the quality of our freestyles were not quite on par with what you would hear at the larger stations, but we were having fun.
That's great.
Yeah, I thought we'd had a conversation over email about, you had mentioned to me that you felt like some of the larger cities get more attention for their hip hop radio shows. So, you know, that makes me curious about that, especially in this era you're talking about where people would learn about radio shows through cassette tapes that people had made, you know, before the days of the internet. That's how you might learn about radio shows in different parts of the country, was through this, you know, kind of more complicated network of having to tape a show and transmit that tape elsewhere. Could you talk a little bit about why you think hip hop radio the importance of hip-hop radio in smaller communities versus big cities?
Yeah, sure. I mean, I think that when you're thinking about a group or a rapper that's coming out of a real small area that's not necessarily near one of the metropolitan areas, being able to get their voice out there is difficult. Even if they have the money to be able to press up some vinyl or CDs, getting a large station to play them when nobody knows who they are is just not going to happen. So it falls on college and community stations that are generally more open to local artists and smaller artists to help try to break them, to give them a chance, to bring them up to the studio for an interview, to, you know, let them freestyle on air and debut their music on air. It's essential for you know, college and community stations through the years to help break these artists that would not otherwise be heard. And you had mentioned about how the spread of the music comes through the tape trading, especially in the early days. And that was true even, you know, in the very early days in New York City. It was, you know, it was hard outside of New York City to get much in the way of hip hop in music stores. You didn't have that many singles that were hitting on a national or international level. So a lot of times these recordings that were made from the radio in New York would be, you know, sold on the street corner or mailed to a friend down in Atlanta or whatever. And that's how, you know, music from the very early days of hip hop was getting spread beyond its local reach. And that it's interesting how that keeps coming up even today, where some of the other collectors that I'm working with on the Hip Hop Radio Archive have some of their source material are, you know, recordings that they've gotten, you know, especially from like the UK, a lot of collectors in England and in London, especially, they have these recordings of early New York hip hop shows that they, you know, have purchased over the years or had friends send them. And they just, you know, they're the ones that have this history in their hands, and they're, you know, on the other side of the ocean.
That's amazing.
So yeah, it's really interesting to see how the recordings spread.
Well, that's Ryan McMichael, founder of the Hip Hop Radio Archive, online at hiphopradioarchive.org. You're listening to Radio Survivor, the sound of strong communities. My name is Eric Klein. We're joined also on the line by my co-host, Jennifer Waits. And I might need to just live in this like idea for a while, the idea of the pre-internet, you know, mixtape underground that preceded your Hip Hop Radio Archive on the internet, and how there would be no digital archive without this informal cassette tape exchange happening around the world of people who basically recorded on their cassette tapes off the radio one great live hip hop radio show, a live mix of a DJ that also would include, you know, possibly freestyles of live guests, possibly rap battles with live guests, air breaks that you were talking about, which were also fun and important. I'd love to hear you talk more about air breaks, Ryan. But like, what is, how did it work? How did this cassette tape underground, did anybody organize anything, or was it really just friend to friend, peer to peer file sharing through the US mail and international mail?
Yeah, I mean, I think essentially that's what it was. I believe in the. I wasn't there to witness it, but I. Yeah. In the early days.
But you were making your own tapes. Did you just keep them at home?
Yeah. I mean, by the time I was doing it, it was mostly just for myself and maybe a couple of friends in the area. We would, you know, we would each record a lot of the same shows, and, you know, if one of us missed it, the other one would get it.
Right. But you were saying that you were doing that in the Philadelphia and the New Jersey region. You could pick up hip hop radio from both cities.
Unfortunately, I was a little further in South Jersey, so I got Philadelphia and the Princeton stations, but it was very rare that I would ever be able to pull in anything from New York City.
Yeah.
North Jersey was able to do that, but South Jersey not so much. It's in the early days, it really was just a lot of kind of word of mouth, passing to friends, you know, selling on the street corner, that kind of thing. And even once, you know, the internet started becoming a force in the, you know, in the mid 90s, and college kids that had these tapes had them, you know, it wasn't sharing the tapes themselves online like we think of now. It was, you know, because the bandwidth wasn't there. Everybody was still using dial-up modem. So it was just a different place to exchange addresses. Where can I trade you a copy of this tape for a copy of your tape? And that helped spread those tapes even further. The physical copies of the tapes. It really wasn't until the, I would say probably the mid 2000s that, or maybe early 2000s when the file sharing services like DivShare and ZShare and RapidShare and all those various services combined with music forums, and a lot of the trading ended up taking place on music forums where they were previously trading addresses. They were now trading the links to these tapes that they were posting. But as mentioned earlier, the file sharing services come and go and can disappear at a moment's notice.
Yeah.
So, you know, that left a lot of dead links in the wake. And that opened the door later for music blogs, where people would end up posting not only their own digitized tapes, but tapes that they might have collected over the years from the music forums. So that helped re-spread those files.
And Ryan McMichael of Hip Hop Radio Archive, can you make the case, like, why does it matter to have, you know, the front to back, the beginning, middle, and end of a whole radio show when, you know, all of these songs, I can assume, that are there, we can hear them somewhere else. And so why does it matter to have the archive of the particular show from the 80s or 90s?
It gives you, well, there are a number of reasons. And unfortunately, we don't always necessarily have the full shows. I know I myself sometimes was tight on money, so I would cut out songs that I already had 10 copies of on other episodes.
There's only a certain number of minutes on the tape. It might not match up to the number of minutes on the air.
That's right. And I would always prefer to get an air break over a song that I already had from another show. But when you can, it's important to be able to hear a full episode as it was aired, because the context of where the music was played in the mix really has an effect on how that song hits you. You know, listening to a song by itself is a little different from catching it in the middle of a mix of similar songs of similar tempos where the DJ is building up a certain mood. Additionally, you know, a lot of times the DJs on these shows were also were turntablists and mixtape DJs, not just simply blending songs into each other, but they were, you know, cutting these songs up and doing on-air remixes and taking acapellas and mixing them with instrumentals from other tracks. So you'd get whole different views of songs that you had heard before, you know, just by the way that the DJ was playing them, either where in the set they were playing them or how they were, you know, how they were cutting and scratching them as they were playing them.
That's really cool. And I'm glad that you mentioned the turntablism element of it too. And where do you think turntablism and those techniques, you know, was that first heard on more underground stations as well, like community and college radio stations?
Yeah, you would sometimes hear that in the early days on commercial stations. You would sometimes hear DJs taking some risks. And I think it's always been a little more accepted on hip hop radio, even on commercial stations, to be doing that sort of thing. But I think you'd hear the real experimentation happening more on the college and community stations, especially since they have a little more flexibility in what they're able to play and the version of the song that they're able to play. And they may not have to track the music that they play the exact same way that a commercial station would.
Mm-hmm. Right. So I hate to even ask this question because, as Eric knows, I'm always dubious about first claims, you know, about stations saying, we're the first to do this, we're the first to do that. But I am curious about if, in all of your research and collecting of tapes, if you can give a sense of where the first hip-hop radio shows happened, if you know of particular stations, particular parts of the country.
Because, like, I want to follow up on Jennifer's question with the idea that I think is true, and I want you to either dissuade me of this notion or agree with me, that hip-hop was not welcome on commercial radio first, that it only got exposed to listeners via these more underground stations in the early days.
Right, right. And what's generally considered to be the first real all hip hop show was Mr. Magic's show out of New York City, and he started on community radio before he moved to a commercial station. So I would say that's very much true. And what's been interesting in this project is that a lot of the early New York shows are relatively well known, whether it's Mr. Magic and Marley Marl or DJ Red Alert, The Awesome Two. All those shows are relatively well known, and you know their start in the early to mid 80s. But something that has come to me since I started the archive was coming across shows that I didn't even know about on the other side of the country that were edging towards this hip hop format even before I would have ever thought it. For instance, there's one show out of Boulder on community radio KGNU that's called The Eclipse Show.
Yeah, we're gonna catch you on the flip side. It's The Eclipse Show, 88.5, and it don't get no better than this. Peace, y'all.
So it started back in 1978 as what they labeled as, quote, an alternative black radio show, where they were covering a lot of music and politics of the day that other stations were not. But even back then in 1978, whenever there was a hip hop song that was coming out, it was finding its way into the mix on the Eclipse Show. And eventually, as more and more hip hop became available, the Eclipse Show became a full on hip hop show. And what's interesting is that 40 years later, the Eclipse Show is still on the air in Boulder. I had never heard of this show. It's been running 40 years as essentially one of the earliest hip-hop shows and one of the longest-running hip-hop shows in the world.
Wonderful. And you have links. Do you have archives of that on hiphoparchive.org?
Yes, we actually do have a few episodes of that. I'm working with DJ AL, who is one of the current DJs on the show, and he's been working. I just happened to get in touch with him right as he was starting to digitize these tapes and thinking about how to share them. And so we've formed a partnership, and he's posted, I think, 3 or 4 full episodes so far to the archives.
Can you tell me a little bit more, Ryan McMichael, about like what is a show in 1978 that's starting to turn into a hip hop show sound like? Like what makes it, what's hip hop in 1978?
Well, unfortunately, I have not yet heard that episode of the Eclipse Show, but a lot of people discuss DJs from New York like Frankie Crocker as kind of being the forerunners to that, where you know he's providing the voice and kind of the atmosphere that was welcoming to you know the early hip hop music that was coming out. That was you know at the time it was kind of you know disco and dance oriented. You know in 78, 79 when Rapper's Delight and some of the early Sugar Hill stuff was coming out. It was kind of worked into the you know, the rest of the funk and soul and disco that was being played at the time on the radio.
So speaking of kind of this hidden show, could you give us a sense of what is contained in the hip hop radio archive, kind of the breadth of shows and where they're located? Is it mostly a certain part of the country? And I know you hope it to be bigger than it is currently. So, you know, what are those plans?
Right. I'm pretty happy with the representation so far, but it definitely has a long way to go. We of course have a pretty solid collection of New York City hip hop shows from the 80s and 90s. But I've also made it a point to really try to search out other areas. So we have thanks to collectors in the UK like Irish Craig and DJ Step One, they've provided some really great Tim Westwood tapes, and Tim Westwood started one of the first hip hop shows in London and became just a giant name overseas. And so we have shows of his from the mid 80s all the way up into the 90s. We have some shows from early Los Angeles radio, including some of Dr. Dre's early radio appearances from around 1985, which are really, really good.
Rock,
some of Dr. Dre's early radio appearances from around 1985, which are really, really good. Dre was playing at the time a lot of the music that you were hearing in New York City in 85, but also you started to hear some of that L.A. electro sound creep in.
So Dr. Dre of N.W.A. Fame and other important hip-hop history was the DJ
correct
on this
show. Correct. Oh, neat. Yeah.
And what radio station was that on?
That was on K-Day.
And is that a...
that was, I want to say 1380 AM. Yeah.
Wow. I know nothing about K-Day, an AM radio station that played hip-hop. So is it a college radio, a community radio, a commercial radio station?
You know, I really should know that off the top of my head. I can't remember whether it was a commercial or a... Okay.
I'm sorry to put you on the spot, Ryan McMichael, but we'll look up K-Day and get back to the listeners. That's amazing. And so you were saying that you could really hear, Dr. Dre is playing New York hip-hop music, but he's also developing what is becoming or about to become known as like the West Coast sound of what hip-hop is
correct.
In the 80s.
Yeah, and it really blended really well together. And Dre was a wonderful, an outstanding DJ. So, his mixes were really well worth the time. So, yeah, and, I've also tried to reach out to a lot of college stations and just try to find any, no matter how small the show, I'm interested in getting representations from around the country and around the world of different shows. For instance, I have a show that I just happened to get from a guy that I met online back in the mid-90s that was recorded on the now defunct or W... Sorry, I had to look this up. WESQ from North Carolina, Wesleyan College. It was called Basement Music. Very small show, but I feel like it's every bit as essential to have that sort of thing represented alongside the large shows.
Yeah, I was going to ask about the South, the U.S. South.
Right now the South beyond North Carolina is not really well represented on the archive, but I'm working on that. I have hopefully some Atlanta based shows coming my way soon. But we have about 350 episodes on the archive at this point, and that includes just over 100 of Lecco's Lemma, which was a show that aired out of Boston on WMBR from MIT and WZBC in Boston College, that is part of the University of Massachusetts Boston Hip Hop Radio Collection. They've allowed us to include those shows in our archive as well.
Yeah, I just heard about that project. I know it's not your project specifically, but are you able to speak to that a little bit? I know that they even just had an event where they had people coming in with hip hop artifacts to a library.
What's this, Jennifer? Can you put more details to that question for me?
Oh well, I'm hoping Ryan can because I only know sketchy details. But
yeah, but where and what and when?
Oh, in Boston, there's a whole hip hop. Archive project.
That was a really interesting one because Boston is a lot of times is not thought of as a real hip hop center, but there were a number of important acts that came out of there, and a lot of them got their start because of this show called Lecco's Lemma, which ran from 1985 till 1988. And fortunately, there was a collector named Willie Alexander who recorded almost every single episode, and his tapes found their way to the University of Massachusetts Boston, and they digitized all of them, got them all online, and thanks to his generosity, there were 3 years of hip hop radio from Boston that would never have been heard otherwise, beyond the city limits.
I love that. You're listening to Radio Survivor. My name is Eric Klein. That's the voice of Ryan McMichael. And Jennifer Waits is also co-host of Radio Survivor. And Ryan, you just described what to me is like the Radio Survivor hero, of the hero archivist. I want to like promote this archetype where somebody just decides just like deep down in their heart that something is important. you know, no one else in the world might agree, but they're the ones who made the tape and kept the tape and held on to the tape, because, you know, it gets more and more important as the years go by how long they held on to the tape, and then they share it, right? And now that thing that they were the only person in the world that preserved it, now it's around, you know, and now it can be spread again. It doesn't have to just sort of disappear into history. And I just love that. And he, you know, that kind of amateur archivist, they keep popping up in on our Radio Survivor conversations.
Yeah, and I think that type of person is so important, because I find it's very difficult in any given time to really know what is the best thing to archive. There are, you know, obviously people that do this for, you know, professionally, and they, you know, make very good judgments. But I think in a lot of cases, particularly when you're talking about subcultures, it's really difficult to know in the moment, is this tape that I made last week going to really be all that important 20 years from now? Who's going to care about it? But thankfully, there are those people that hang on to stuff just in case and are willing to fill up their basements with blank unlabeled tapes and then return to them and share those.
So it's good. It's a good rule of thumb to trust your own taste. Like, if you know it's important and no one agrees with you, then that makes it even more important.
Right.
To be preserved.
Right, until you find that other person that agrees with you.
Yeah. And and thinking about these tendencies, if there are people out there who have tapes of hip hop radio shows, what's the best way for them to archive them and connect with your hip hop radio archive?
First, get in touch. Get in touch through the website, or you can just email me at laze@hiphopradioarchive.org. Email me directly. If people have the methods to digitize their own tapes, that's great, and I can provide them with a space to share them. And if they don't, I'm also putting the offer out there that I will digitize anybody's tapes for them and mail them back, as long as they're willing to let those tapes become a part, the digitized versions of those tapes become part of the archive.
Neat.
And how are you... That's a really cool offer, first of all. And you've talked about how you're reaching out to certain stations and folks. What's your process right now for locating the archives that you most want to find?
Right. So I've tried initially to reach out to a few different types of people. First, my own personal collection. I've made sure to get that all digitized and online as much as possible. But then I started reaching out to other collectors, starting with folks that had music blogs where they were sharing these episodes, but now had dead links. And then also with radio DJs themselves, because I think that's really important, because I want to get eventually, as time goes on, I want to get more of the stories behind these shows. So I want to make sure to be in touch with the people that help make these shows. This is not, you know, I'm a fan doing this. I'm just trying to help spread the word and help their legacies be preserved.
Right.
So I'm reaching out to the DJs themselves as well. And so those are the main folks that I'm trying to reach out to, and it's a lot of emails, a lot of tweets, a lot of yes, we'll get back to you, or yes, I'm interested, and then not hearing for another 3 months. It's it's a time consuming process, so I understand. So I just try to be patient but persistent, and try to let people see what we're doing here, and hope that they'll want to be a part of it and help share and preserve their own legacies online.
Are there any other kernels of things that you've learned through this process, you know, things that have surprised you?
This may be one of those sections where we need to cut out a long blank spot.
That's okay. And Jennifer's asking about, you know, your work archiving what is mostly community, but also college radio, sometimes even commercial radio, but underground radio of the 80s and 90s, when hip hop really... was an underground art form, less than the worldwide global pop phenomenon that it becomes later on. So when when community radio and college radio DJs were really growing the art form. And then here are these archives of this important moment, really, you know, the only possible way we could know in the future that these things happened at all is these tapes that are being made that you make available on hiphopradioarchive.org, Ryan McMichael.
There we go.
And now your answer to Jennifer's question.
I think it's really interesting to listen to what have become, you know, pivotal moments in the culture as they happen. Things that we take for granted as being classics, when they were released, you know, a lot of times you would hear DJs talking trash about songs that went on to become, you know, certified classics, or talking trash about other DJs in the area when you know now that they're all, you know, that they're all good friends. So kind of hearing the music as it was debuted and shared, and these artists in the context of everything else that was going on at the time. And that's one thing that I'm trying to do with the archive, is provide a context for these shows as well. So when you're on the page for any given episode of a show, in the right sidebar, it's going to show you a list of albums that were coming out within the previous week or two, as well as other episodes of other shows that aired right around that time. So you can kind of jump around and hear what was happening at the same period in different parts of the country or on different stations. Because I think kind of hearing that side by side gives you an idea of how the music is spreading. So, you know, when a song is debuted in the United States, you may not see that same song debuted until several months later in the UK to a completely different response. So it's interesting to kind of see and listen to the music and the shows in the context of everything else that was going on.
Right, which is what you were saying earlier today on today's episode of Radio Survivor, that when you listen to the full DJ mix, the full radio show as it was presented live when it aired, you really get some songs, I'm going to say, in a brand new context, right? Songs that we might be familiar with because they survived the decades and now are considered classic hip hop songs, but in the context that they were played by the DJ who may have just heard them for the first time that week. Like, it's a unique and important context for that music.
Right.
Yeah. And especially if thinking about this being the pre-internet era, you know, the way things spread was so different back in those days. And, mm-hmm. and you could see this movement across the country. So I'm so excited that you provide that context. I think that would be a really interesting exercise to listen to shows from different parts of the country from the same period.
Right. I don't know if this is necessary, but I have to do it. Sort of Eric Klein getting on his grandpa hat. Do people realize that hip hop was not universally celebrated when it was first a part of the, you know, underground culture? And my example of that is that when Will Smith, of all people, when, what was his name? DJ Jazzy Jeff and the Fresh Prince, when they won their MTV Music Award for hip hop, back when the MTV Music Awards were really, really, really cool, right? In the, I think, late 80s, early 90s. When they won their first MTV Music Award, it was not even televised. They were given their award like earlier than the live MTV TV broadcast, because that was how MTV, that was where MTV put hip hop in cultural context, like off the air in the morning.
That's really interesting. I had forgotten about that. It's kind of giving it the Academy Awards equivalent of, you know, best grip or something like that, where it was not considered part of the main show. Yeah.
And I think it might be impossible for younger people to know that MTV like didn't think hip hop was important for a long time, right? It had one show that was, you know, ghettoized, really.
What's to give a radio version of example of this? When I remember when I was listening back to Raw Deal in the early 90s, that at the time they were taking a lot of shots at one of the commercial stations in Philadelphia that was, for lack of a better term, you know, the urban station. They played hip hop, but they played R&B. And they were taking shots at this commercial station because the commercial station was advertising their as a feature that they had a, quote, no rap workday. And this was, you know, 1991, 1992 era. So this was, you know, college radio was taking that opportunity to point out commercial radio's hesitance to play hip hop during the day. So
hesitance is putting it lightly, right?
Exactly.
Open disdain.
So Ryan, is there anything else that you feel people need to know about the hip hop radio archive?
Well, I definitely want to make it clear that I personally am not the end all be all of radio archive and hip hop radio. This is I'm a fan. I'm doing this to help try to preserve and share the music that I grew up loving. And I really hope that as the project moves forward and more people get involved, that we can really that we can get folks involved that were directly involved with the early hip hop radio shows and the forming of the culture, and so we can have all the important voices that really need to be heard included. You know, we're still in the very early days of this site, but it's a team effort with other fans and DJs, and it definitely would not be possible without contributions from others, and so I want to make that very clear that this is not a one-man show by any stretch of the imagination, and it's for everybody. There's no, I'm not taking any ad money here. This is not my day job. This is something that's done for the love, as they say.
Yeah, I guess, and that's important to add because there's a lot of there's a long history of exploitation. Let's just put it that way.
Yeah, and I'm trying to be as conscious as I can be about having the voices that need to be heard and amplified be a part of the project.
And that website is hiphopradioarchive.org. And the founder that you just heard from is Ryan McMichael. My name is Eric Klein, and also on the Radio Survivor show is Jennifer Waits. And we're about out of time, but Jennifer, you have one last question?
Yeah, you know, behind the scenes here at Radio Survivor, we've been talking a lot about college radio and hip hop history. So maybe we've talked about it a bit with you, but maybe just, you know, in a very quick way, if you could explain why you think college radio is important to the history of hip hop.
Sure. I mean, college radio has always been the place where an MC that could not be heard somewhere else can go up and get an interview, get a freestyle on the air, get their new music heard. And I think even today with, you know, with streaming stations competing with satellite stations competing, that college radio and community radio still play that important role for the local community, letting the community hear artists that would not necessarily be heard otherwise.
Yeah. Cool. And let's in the minute that we have left, can you tell us again, like, what's another one of your favorites from the archive that you've put up where you made a connection, right? You've been a lifelong fan, Ryan McMichael, of hip hop, you know, starting in your youth in the 80s and 90s and making tapes. Like, what's something recently that you learned from your work, you know, building up your online archive that you didn't know about hip hop?
I would definitely say that it goes back to that that show in Boulder really helped show me that hip hop was spreading in so many different parts of the world when I did not realize that it was there. So there was, you know, there was hip hop in throughout Europe and throughout the South and the West of the United States when no one would have been thinking about those areas. And I think that's what's been kind of enlightening to me. It was one of those things intellectually I knew, but to actually hear what was on the air in those spots at the time has really made that clear.
That's neat. Yeah. And as you were saying, like, as we've been saying this whole episode of Radio Survivor, that's the way it spread was a recorded music, right? You know, vinyl and CDs and recorded music, but really, it really helped that it was being played on the radio throughout the country and throughout the world. And that radio show that you're referring to was on KGNU and you said it was called The Eclipse Show there in Boulder on KGNU, and that it's still on the air after...
almost, I think 40? This is their 40th year, yeah.
Whoa! We should reach out to those folks for their 40th year anniversary of that hip-hop show. That's a mental note, Jennifer, mental note.
Mental note. Yeah, and I mean, and as we often say, I'd love to hear more about shows like that right. we're not aware of. I think there were a lot of shows that were kind of maybe doing similar things around the same time in the early days of hip-hop. And,
yeah.
And definitely reach out to Radio Survivor and let us know what shows that we need to know about.
Yeah, exactly. Email us, podcast@radiosurvivor.com, if there are things about community radio, college radio, non-commercial radio, or even underground radio history that you know that we didn't talk about today on this episode. And of course, Ryan McMichael of the Hip Hop Radio Archive, hiphopradioarchive.org, also wants to hear from you. You can find a link to his website in the show notes for today's episode on radiosurvivor.com. Ryan McMichael, thank you so much for joining us today. I hope you'll stick with us on the podcast version coming up after the show, and people can hear that on radiosurvivor.com. But for, as far as the radio version, we have to go. So thank you so much.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it. Because party energy is what he generates. We'll prescribe for you this potent elixir. Two turntables, speakers, and a mixer. The way is the place for you to be. To witness Dr. Dre in surgery. He has a PhD in mixology. To cut on the wheel so viciously. Boom, boom, goes the beat. To rock the nation, please receive mouth-to-mouth resuscitation. Come here, freak, Velosa MC, Dr. Dre, operate in surgery.
I'm Dr. Dre, gorgeous hunk of a man, doing tricks on the mix.